Hi everyone, welcome back to another episode on the Guide Me Glow podcast. Today we have a special guest with us. We have Pip Reed, who is a qualified clinical nutritionist. She specializes in balancing hormones for fat loss and achieving clear, glowing skin with the help of your diet. And I'm really excited to share with you guys this conversation. We talk about mindset and how that impacts the way that we eat. We talk a lot about hormones, the E3 diet that helps her clients get the results that they want. And then we also talk about the best foods to be including into our diets for optimal health and glowing skin. So without further ado, let's get into the episode. Welcome to the Guide Me Glow podcast. I'm your host, Shannon Tang, and I'm a holistic health coach that is here to help you become your glowier self mentally, physically, and spiritually. I'm a lifestyle and wellness content creator and founder of the wellness platform Guide Me Glow. In this podcast, I share my journey and knowledge on all things self-development, manifesting, confidence, healing your relationship with food and body, and so much more. Follow for weekly episodes to listen to you on your Glow Girl walk. Hi, Pip. Welcome to the Guide Me Glow podcast. I'm so excited to have you on here.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Do you want to do a little intro on yourself, a bit about your work and your journey to becoming a nutritionist and all that kind of stuff?
Sure. I have been a nutritionist now for just under 10 years. I always had a big background in dancing and a lot of sport. And so it's always been a big passion of mine. I, of course, went down the different direction when I first left school and did a business degree and worked in law for a while. And during that time, I actually became a personal trainer and realized very quickly that there wasn't a lot of information on nutrition taught to personal trainers. So I decided to pursue the nutrition side of things. So I became a nutritionist, as I said, nearly 10 years ago. And I think I've always been mostly interested in helping women and women's health and hormones and weight loss and skin. So my first clinic I ever worked in actually was a skin clinic in Sydney. And, yeah, a beautiful girl named Melanie Grant, I worked with her. And she was fantastic, and I learned so much with her and through her, and also realized that there's a lot of area or room to specialize. You know, I think back when I first started out, nutrition was a little bit of a new area, and everyone was sort of like probably more focusing on weight loss, and that's what they wanted, and that's why they thought a nutritionist existed. So whilst I do a lot of weight loss work, and that's probably the predominant reason people come to see me, I very quickly realized that behind all that need for weight loss or reasons why people couldn't lose weight or were stagnant was more hormone and hormonal imbalances that were also contributing to a lot of other signs and symptoms, including their skin. So it worked really well when I was working with Mel that, you know, I could treat the skin and the hormones and the weight loss all at the same time. So it's been a bit of a journey, and I actually was diagnosed with endometriosis very early in my nutrition career after coming off the pill for 10 years. So that was another huge reason that I really wanted to treat hormones and to help women who are dealing with anything along the lines of endometriosis and polycystic ovaries. And as I've aged, I guess that also includes more symptoms to do with perimenopause and menopause and, you know, really any menstrual irregularities which are running rife, especially in this day and age. So, yeah, bit of a long story of how I got here. But
how did you kind of get into, you know, the whole health and fitness world, and like what kind of made you think, oh, I actually want to take this further and become a nutritionist and a specialist in like hormones and skin and all of that?
I've always been probably very fixated, maybe too fixated on food and how, like, definitely aesthetics and how it affected my body. So there was definitely that self-interest there. I wanted to be looking after myself. And just from learning and becoming that nutritionist then, I just realized how I could help other women. And it sort of gave me that platform. And I feel like I've been one of those nutritionists, no matter what stage of life I am, I tend to get the clients at the same time. So whether it be fertility or endometriosis and it's only really the last sort of 5+ years, I feel like endo and polycystic ovaries and these sort of things are being talked about a lot more.
Yeah, I've heard that too.
Yeah, yeah. And I think there's now been a movement of people are recognizing that they don't have to deal with crappy periods and, you know, yeah, or everything that goes with it. So it's been really, I don't know, I feel like I've been really lucky to be helping so many girls to recognize that this doesn't need to be part of their life.
Yeah, that's amazing. And I think what you mentioned about, I guess, like your struggle with being really focused on food and aesthetics, how do you feel like you overcame that? Because I feel like so many girls, especially within the whole social media world, there's so much, there is pressure to like look a yeah. certain way and, you know, be to like society standards. And I think a lot of the reason why people start these diets and, you know, they eat a certain way is to predominantly look a certain way. And then they start to realize, okay, how is this actually making me feel? But I feel, yeah, lots of girls are really confused on like what would be the right diet for them, or like they're trying to maybe like lose weight, or and they're just like trying to eat minimal or like certain things. And, you know, even though what I eat in a day is now, like people take that so literally. But it's yes. like everybody's obviously so different. So it's like, how do you feel like you kind of overcame the whole point of just focusing on how you look?
I think it had to really come from within. I think there's like, and there's always going to be an element of me that cares. And that's just new human nature as well. And, yeah. and we're all, you know, on social media now and very susceptible to this. But to be honest, I do unfollow people that I just think are so unrealistic and aren't portraying probably their true selves. I think a really big lesson that we're all sort of learning and coming to learn is that there is no one size fits all. And what you're doing, you know, like your hormones probably completely different to what mine are doing. You know, you might be looking at people on Instagram who are suffering from polycystic ovaries or adrenal fatigue or a thyroid condition that they may not even know about. So they're eating a certain way that might work for them, and then that may not work for you, and it can change your hormone structure just by simply eating incorrectly. The whole food deprivation thing is really damaging because it does change your hormone structure as well. It can increase your estrogen. It can affect your thyroid, which will slow down your metabolism. So this whole like calorie deprivation, carbohydrate deprivation, which is so bad for girls and their hormone balance, and sort of like over-exercising. I used to work in gyms in Sydney and watching these people just smash themselves at the gym and then not eat for that food. And yes, you're going to get results like probably in the short term, but yeah. it's the long-term effects. Like you've messed so much, your hormone balance is probably out of structure. Your metabolism has probably slowed and you're just not eating right for your body. I think it's got to be it's really important that if you want to seek out a long-term successful weight loss journey, that you do seek out professional advice, get the right testing done, have your signs and symptoms, your health history, everything looked at, because that information is what's going to give, you know, the practitioner the best information to give to you to get on the right diet.
Yeah. And how would you recommend someone to even start to begin to like look into, you know, their diet and what would be right for them?
I think a really good way to start, like from the very basics, is to start like writing down what you eat. And I don't mean in like calorie counting or weighing food or anything. Just look at a day's worth of food for you, or a couple days worth of food for you, and take that to someone, because that's going to give them a really good indication of your lifestyle, how you like to eat, when you like to eat. And it's sometimes just the small changes that can make such a big difference. And it's often rare that you need to go on these like, you know, full eradication diets or detoxes or anything like that. I'd start at the basics and get some testing done. That's a really good way. Functional pathology as opposed to just your GP. Because functional pathology is going to give a lot more in-depth information as to where your body is at. And that's like a really good basis. And if you don't have like the access to functional pathology, then even just talking to an expert about your signs and symptoms, because there are so many that can be indicative of, say, a hormone imbalance, which might be prohibiting you from actually reaching your goals.
And what is that test for then, if you were to get it done?
So, well, lots of tests. So if I were looking at functional pathology, I often ask my clients to do like a thyroid test. So that's just going to be testing your thyroid stimulating hormone, the free T3, free T4. And a lot of Medicare and GPs won't do that just for, they're looking at a sick population. They're not looking for optimal health. So that's what a, you know, a natural health practitioner, we're looking for optimal health. So the way we read blood test results is a little bit different to just a general doctor. Nothing wrong with a general doctor, but they tend to treat more acute signs and symptoms.
Yeah.
And then also you can do some really amazing in-depth hormone, like Dutch, there's a Dutch test, a Dutch plus test, which not only gives you your hormone reading on a certain day, because it's always important where you are in your cycle to read these test results, but also will give you ratios and tell you how your body's actually metabolizing these hormones. It's not just about here, this is where your estrogen is, this is where your progesterone is. It's how they're all interacting and how your body's breaking them down and detoxifying them, and that's making like the big difference.
Yeah. And so would you recommend going to specialists like around the area for that? Or because I feel like a lot of people might be a bit confused on like where to find these people, because I guess it's not as common, right? Like you just go to your doctors and you get like a blood test or a hormone test, but you get all the results, but it's like, oh, okay, what do I do?
I think that's always a great place to start, like going to get my best advice is to see like a nutritionist or a naturopath. And then, which you don't need a referral for. So you can just book in and see these practitioners. From there, we usually specify bloods that we'd like you to either get from your GP or do through functional pathology. If required, like it's always good to see blood. Some people are really happy, or, you know, there's some standout symptoms that need treating and you don't need those tests immediately. But I think it's always good to get like a full analysis done at the start and then get direction from a practitioner, as opposed to just like getting on the internet and, you know, Dr. Google
self-diagnose
and then you end up like down these with so much information, and it's a bit of an overload.
Yeah. Okay, so before we get into like the bulk of the episode, we always start with an affirmation of the week for our listeners. So I want to ask you, do you have an affirmation that you can give to us that will kind of, you know, set our week on a good tone, and something that's a bit inspirational, or just anything that you feel is like called to you this week?
I feel like there's something really to be said about when the first thing you do and wake up in the morning, and I really hate unnatural light. So I think waking up with natural light and saying to yourself, it's going to be a positive day. And I think that is a really easy way to get you in a good mindset. And anything from that, you're in that healthy, positive mindset, and it's a really, like from there only good things can really happen, because you've got yourself there already. And always make your bed.
Yes, always make your bed.
Always make
your bed. I agree. I think like your morning routine and the way that you start your day really does impact the rest of your day. And it's like setting yourself up for success and having that positive mindset will just like make the rest of the day go smoother. And yes, yeah, definitely making your bed.
Make your bed. Achieve that one thing. If you do nothing else that day, at least your bed's made.
Yeah. So I want to move into more of like the mindset work about, you know, obviously with nutrition, it's physical, but a lot of it comes within the mind. So basically how mindset has an impact of the food and the way that we think.
I think mindset's just one part of the equation. I think it can take a really long time to get into that positive mindset and have like a regular routine where you're going for the right foods. I think that's a bit of a different topic, and that can come from habit and repetitive behavior. I also strongly believe that mindset can come from, can be the after effect of what we're eating and how we're eating. For example, you know, like eating a really high processed, sugary, high salt, high vegetable oil diet can lower our mood, because it affects our gut, it affects our metabolism, our hormone structure. So from a like a physical point of view, you've got, if you're going to be eating a diet like that, it's going to affect your mindset, because they're the wrong foods for you. Same as if you're eating something that you're intolerant to or have an allergy to and you don't recognize, that can really impact our mood. So there's that perspective where what you eat actually directly impacts your mindset and affects your cortisol levels, which is obviously your stress response. And then, as I said, I think that the other side of the mindset is if you're like going to have a positive mindset and choosing a way to eat, not only will you be making better choices of what you're putting in your body, which will help your mindset, but it's also is a really nice element of control there. And I think a lot of mindset is about being in control. And when we're on these like, you know, really highly processed diets that we're just grabbing things because we're busy. I think that can be a bit of a slippery slope because suddenly things feel out of control, and that's when you see a lot of people kind of spiral, go for more alcohol, go for sugary snacks and energy boosting foods just to keep them going, more coffee, and that can ruin the mindset as well. So I think mindset's a really important aspect of nutrition. It's just whether, and I always look to include it in anyone's treatment plan, it's just what perspective and what how you look at it, I guess.
Yeah, and for someone who maybe does have a really busy lifestyle and they find themselves, you know, come back home and they've got nothing there but the processed sugary foods, or, you know, maybe they do have like the healthy vegetables but they just can't bother to make it, what advice would you give to someone who does have that lifestyle and they're just trying to be healthier but they just can't seem to find the time or even the motivation, you know?
Yeah, I think we're really lucky these days. Like, there are a lot of foods off the supermarket shelf that are actually healthy, and they do avoid the high sugars and the vegetable oils and more processed foods. And, you know, you can buy good soups. You can have, you know, some like salmon, like the Regal King salmon in the fridge that you could add to a salad. Like, there's great foods available if you know what to eat. That you could have that will have no guilt attached to it, you know. And I think it's being guided in that area and knowing what you can have, and that way it takes that pressure off if you are, because let's face it, everyone's so busy these days. I even recently did a supermarket shred, which was literally based on foods that you could buy off the supermarket shelf and be guilt-free and still able to achieve, say, weight loss goals, have energy, and not throw out your hormones and disrupt your goals. So there are foods out there. I just recommend doing the research or, you know, finding a practitioner that can help in that area, because you don't, like, I really disagree now that we all need to be in the kitchen all day. We have so much access to, you know, slow cookers, even like just the food off the supermarket shelves. There's so many options to have good, healthy food at your disposal without breaking the bank, without causing you stress, and without spending more than like 5 or 10 minutes in the kitchen.
Yeah. So what would you say foods that are good for balancing hormones?
Obviously, it's always going to depend on what, if there is a hormone imbalance. But let's say like a really good, healthy, female-friendly diet, which is probably the best way to look at it, where we're making sure that you're getting enough phytoestrogens, so your hormones, your estrogens are being metabolized properly and detoxified properly to keep them at a good level, that you're getting, you know, your vitamin A's and E's and skin-supporting supplements, because we all want beautiful skin. I would be saying, making sure that you're having an abundance of fresh fruit and vegetables, and not just fresh. So you can do the frozen these days. I feel like that's a very overlooked part if you are a busy person. So having like every meal consisting of some sort of vegetable, preferably the leafy greens, is always going to be like your high fiber, your vitamin A's, your indole 3 carbonyl, which assists with hormone detoxification. So your leafy greens is really important. Your phytoestrogen, so your organic soys and tempeh, and less processed, like less soy milks and soy sauces and things like that, but more your natural forms of soy. your flaxseed, linseed, your nuts and seeds, easy like go-to snacks, fresh fruit and veggies. The fruit I'd probably stick with more like your high vitamin C, high antioxidants, so your fruits and your berries, your kiwi fruits, your you know, mandarins, things like that, which are all really beautiful and skin supportive too. And obviously your lean proteins, and that's fish, like your omega-3s. Again, like my favorite's the king, the Regal King salmon, which is, you know, New Zealand and sustainable and beautiful fish. And, you know, you can buy the smoked salmon or the fillets off the supermarket shelf, especially for those who are very fish conscious, which I hope we all are. But that's all going to be very potent antioxidants and anti-inflammatories and high in vitamin A and iodine and all very skin supportive as well. So I guess it's a way to glow from the inside is by eating these foods on a regular basis, and making sure that you are avoiding the refined sugars and the vegetable oils. They'd be my probably top two that really interfere with our hormone balance. And obviously like excess alcohol and all those fun things that we should just be mindful of. We can always have balance.
And I think also going along with that, like, you know, having a healthy diet is, I think, like a lot of people kind of know, like, you know, what kind of foods to eat, and, you know, you stick with the fresh fruits and vegetables and that kind of thing. But I found that within like my health journey, when I first got into health, I kind of got a bit like obsessive with being like really with the clean eating, like nothing in my food could have anything that was artificial, or like, you know, obviously checking the ingredients on the back of things are great because you want to make sure that they are fresh, like whole ingredients, but to the point where I wouldn't want anything preserved as nothing. But it got quite like stressful and it was like a lot on my mind. Does that actually have an impact on your weight? Because rather than like, you can be eating the healthiest diet and you can be exercising, but does the stress make you like cling on to weight? Is that like a thing?
Absolutely. Yeah. So this really big obsession with clean eating is called orthorexia, and it is a thing. And it's, you know, I guess I get red flags when I see a client and they're eating better than I am. And I'm like, okay, you know, maybe there's something in there, you're just going too far, and I can see the obsession. Now, the problem with this overthinking everything and being really obsessed, and it's wonderful to do clean eating, but when you go that next level, cortisol and weight gain are very real and they're very intertwined. So cortisol is your fight or flight response. Your adrenal glands secrete it when we're in a stressful situation. So back in the day, as they say, being chased by a tiger, being chased by an ambulance, I can hear in the background. But now we're seeing it as this cortisol being elevated constantly because we're all under a lot of stress. And the problem with this is, you know, when your cortisol levels are elevated, your body's natural reaction is to stop metabolizing food because you need that, you need to go. You're constantly in this state of fight or flight, your body, it's not going to start metabolizing that food. So every time you eat glucose and carbohydrates in particular, especially your refined, it's going to store it. And usually that's stored around the waist section, like the belly button, and it is called insulin resistance, essentially. It's like your fat cells don't have an off switch. They just letting the food in. Now, this happens in about 85% of the population, where they tend to have that reaction, and you'll find it more in, say, emotional eaters who are also running on cortisol, that they're storing this food, and they're starting to see that the changes a lot around the waist. And then you have 15% of the population who probably appetites will shut down during this state of stress. And that whilst, you know, people are always like, I want to be one of the people who loses weight when I'm stressed. It's not that good either because, you know, you're not absorbing nutrients, not getting enough nutrients. And again, that will change your hormonal structure, your thyroid. You know, you might go into hyperthyroidism, which is just, you know, is just as dangerous and uncomfortable and stressful and awful as, say, hypothyroidism, where you tend to see more weight gain. So, yeah, look, I think cortisol is really responsible for a lot of weight issues, and it's probably like the pinnacle of where I would start to treat any hormonal imbalances. Like your sleep and your stress levels are really important, because without good sleep, you're not recovering mm-hmm. from the stress, and it's just a cycle of how it impacts everything else.
Yeah. So if a client was to come to you and say that they did have issues with maybe, yeah, emotional eating, overeating, but they're still eating healthy and they're still exercising, but obviously it's like a mindset thing. They're using food as a tool to de-stress, but it's obviously making them gain weight. And, you know, it's very up and down, right? Because when you overeat, you gain a lot of weight quickly, and then you're trying to like restrict again, and it's like an endless cycle. Yeah, how would you go about treating that client, and what advice would you kind of give to them?
So generally, obviously this is general advice, but I would ask, look at a whole day's worth of what they're eating. Another good thing to do, a good trick to do is, you know, there's a lot of mindless eating in those times. But I ask my clients to get an extra plate out. So get two plates out, and whenever you're eating, I want you to put the equivalent of what you've just eaten on that plate. And I want you to see in that day how much you have actually eaten, because it's all very well to stand at the pantry and go, I'm just having a few nuts, I'm just having a few bits of chocolate or whatever it is. Once you see it on a plate, it can be a really big eye-opener that how much you're actually eating. So that's one method I like them to do. I like to find out what your favorite foods are and see what healthy changes we can make. You know, if you're mindlessly snacking on milk chocolate, which is a big one because of the high sugar, so it's high energy, so it's going to give you that boost plus a bit of caffeine, then let's swap it to dark chocolate, and then let's start to reduce how much you're having and increase the chocolate load, the cacao amount. I also like to make sure that you're chewing your food. So jaw chewing is a stress relief. Like a lot of people clench their jaws at night, and that's a sign of stress. And a lot of people find that they need to chew food to reduce their stress as well. So that's where I'm a little bit anti the whole smoothie soups all the time, things like that, all those meal replacements, because it's not dealing with that factor. So that's where it's really good. Not chewing gum. We're not going down chewing gum lane, because that's got a stop in there. But like some really good, like, you know, activated nuts or nut cluster bars or things like that, that are actually going to activate that and give you something physically to do.
Yeah. Is that why crunchy food is just so satisfying?
So satisfying.
Yeah. Yeah. Even find that, but you know, with that, even the snacks like nuts, or even like if you buy like healthy crisps, whatever, I feel like it's really easy to overeat on those things because, I mean, you just keep going.
Those foods are designed to do that, you know, like those foods are made by the best food scientists in the world. So because, you know, they've worked out the sweet spot of health and, the fats and carbohydrates where you physically cannot stop eating it. They're very clever. If we can swap to some healthier versions of those foods, that's one really good way to sort of satisfy that. But making sure there's protein and healthy fats with every meal. So healthy fats is what's going to increase the nutrient absorption, and your protein is what's going to keep you full for longer. So, you know, and making sure as well, like I know that we're all very prone and anti-carbohydrates, but having some healthy carbs like your brown rice, your quinoa, amaranth, tapioca, all of these foods which are slower to digest, they're going to provide you with B vitamins, which is anti-stress, fiber to keep everything regular and keep your hormones in balance. So making sure that, you know, set out your day if you need to. If you need a plan, being told what to eat and when, and making sure that there's water with every one of those meals and snacks, that can really be a huge stress relief, because it's taking that pressure off of what to eat. And it's also, it's giving you a plan. It's giving you healthier options of foods that you love. And we're keeping you full and hydrated with water too.
And would you say also keeping within like the balance? For me, I like to have, you know, like the 80-20 rule, where obviously 80% of the time you're staying healthy and fit and all that, but then 20% of the time you do let yourself have, you know, treats here and there, because I feel like you can't be perfect 100% of the time. Like I've tried, but it's always going to bounce back. Do you know what I mean? Like your body can't physically, because you're like restricting yourself, even if you feel like you're not restricting yourself from the food. Like but I think mentally you're still restricting yourself, because you're like telling yourself, I can only eat that amount, or I can only eat this at this certain time. It's like more taxing on the
mind. I'm definitely, yeah. 80-20 I think is fantastic. As like in the back of your mind, I don't think like if you can avoid having to write things down, you know, and weighing or measuring or doing anything like that and just simply going, you know what, I'm going to go out to dinner with my girlfriends and I'm going to get a beautiful bowl of pasta and have a good bottle of wine and share and enjoy myself, then and not overthink it. And I think that is really important, and that's just important for, you know, human well-being.
What are some tips that you would give someone to help them feel less stressed around these situations? Going out for dinner, for example, and they have all this like pasta and whatever in front of them, how would you help a client to kind of feel less stressed in those situations, that, you know, thoughts of like, oh my god, it's going to make me gain weight, or it's going to, you know, feel like this?
Yeah, I think there's a lot to be said in knowing you've got a plan the next day. So whether it be getting up and doing some exercise, which I'd always recommend anyway, and being kind to yourself as well. Like, yes, you know, we can often go out and have a binge, or whether it be food or alcohol or both. But instead of, you know, punishing yourself the next day, nourish yourself. Go for that walk. Know that you'll pick up the pieces tomorrow. Start your day with some beautiful eggs on some sourdough, and don't deprive yourself, and don't and back it up with like burgers and fast food and things. Like go and eat food the next day. Relax the night before. You know, drink lots of water, please. And drinking still water is much better for you, because it actually suppresses your appetite 6 times more than sparkling water. So those little little things, like if you're going out to dinner, drink the still water. You don't need the sparkling. It's going to suppress your appetite. Have the pasta, but get the entree size. You know, maybe avoid the bread before you're eating, because all it's going to do is take up precious space for all the other better food. And then instead of bread, you know, make sure you have dessert or something like that. I think it's more about letting go. It's not every night. It's not every second night. It's got to be, you know, a couple times a week. And I think there's a lot to be said about overeating as well. Like, you can enjoy beautiful food. You just don't have to eat all of it. You know what I mean? Like, have more plates. You don't need to eat everything on the plate. And I think you'll feel better about yourself and stick with that other rule, which is feeling 80% full.
For someone who kind of struggles with eating, like not having to eat everything that's in front of them, because I feel like maybe it comes back to, you know, maybe childhood lessons of being like your parents, like you have to eat everything on your plate. And then obviously we kind of take that on to what we are like now. What kind of, you know, tips that you can give to someone that perhaps will help them, you know, recognize when they are full and actually be like, you know what, that's enough, I don't need any more, even if it's in front of me and even if it's really good?
Definitely sticking with the flat water, which is going to fill you up. Making sure that, I think it's often a good idea to share with friends if you're going to be eating out, and that way you get like a side plate, you know, and you fill up your side plate, and you probably find that that's enough once you've done that. And often there's a lot of, the best thing I think about going out with friends is obviously you're eating and talking, and it's a much slower process than, you know, sitting down on a couch and eating in front of the telly, or you're not talking to anyone else, and it can be a bit of a rush job. Like, I think, you know, it's a way that, say, the Mediterranean diet, one of the reasons they're so successful is because they sit and they talk and they share, and they tend to consume less in that respect. And they still, you know, have the bread and have the pasta and everything, but it's not necessarily these enormous amounts that we might have if we were just sitting at home alone. So I think there's something to be said about slowing down and enjoying yourself and enjoying what you're eating, and you'll probably find just by doing that and being around people, you'll eat less.
Yeah. And do we need to be mindful of the amount of calories that we're eating to either, you know, sustain our weight or potentially lose weight?
Look, I'm not a calorie counter, and I have been in the past, and I found it really detrimental to my mental health. You know, there's a time when you look at any menu and you know how many calories are in that dish and that, and it becomes your whole world, really. You obsess about it, how many plates are in the day, and calories aren't they're not created equal. And, you know, we all need different amounts based on our metabolism and our hormones and our thyroid and where we are in our stress levels. So I really, really push all my clients to avoid looking at calories and calorie counting and think of it more of like micronutrients, which are, you know, making sure that you're getting an abundance of color on your plate, because it's the, you know, that's where you're going to fill up on the right nutrients. Once your body gets used to eating like that, as I said, you know, that whole mindful can take a long time, that mindfulness to trigger and for you to form habits, like these long-term healthy habits. But once you do, it just becomes more of a normal way of eating and your body seeks out those foods and doesn't particularly like to overeat. Like, I think people who don't overeat often, when they do, it's really uncomfortable. You suddenly realize that this is not, like, I don't want to feel like this anymore. So, yeah, look, I think there's something to be said about avoiding the calorie counting, but making sure that there's something of each food group on your plate, the protein, whole grains, lots of veggies, as I said, veggies and salads, and always like a drizzle of olive oil.
Yeah, like basically just focusing on the quality and like the vitamins and nutrients that a food will give you rather than like whether how many calories is this. Because I think, yeah, naturally when you do start to eat the things that just have more volume in general, like you will feel more satisfied and full. I feel like for me, when I definitely notice a difference when I include like more like fat, healthy fats and protein, I just feel more satisfied rather than if I just ate something that was, obviously I still eat carbs, but something that's like mainly carbs, I just don't feel, even though I feel full, I don't feel like satisfied. And I think, when you begin to
add, and there's probably a bit of guilt there too,
and
like, and that can take away from the satisfaction as
and there's like so many healthy alternatives that you can have as well. For example, for me, like normal pasta, I'll sub it for like you know, like the pea pulse pasta, and I feel like it tastes the same.
We love the edamame spaghetti, the slendy, and it's organic. It's so like, and so filling, because it really is like,
it's like protein. Protein. No, that's so good. I use that all the time too.
And you don't need a lot of carbs in your day. Like if carbs make you feel sluggish or, you know, you get any sort of symptoms after eating carbs, fatigue, sluggishness, like nausea, anything like that, it can be a sign of a food intolerance as well, which is why I generally recommend to choose the more, not necessarily because you're gluten-free, but a lot of gluten-free alternatives will remove that sort of heavy feeling.
Yeah. So when it comes to hormonal imbalance, how would we even know that we have an unbalanced hormones?
That's such a good question. There's so many symptoms that I think as girls we've kind of been taught to believe that there are a lot of symptoms that we just need to put up with and it's just part of being female. You know, a lot of symptoms around irregular menstrual or menstrual irregularities. You know, back in the day when I had endometriosis but undiagnosed and I had shocking period pain and really heavy periods and would get, you know, outbreaks on my chin, for example, every month. And it was, you're so led to believe that that's normal and it's just a normal part of being a girl. And now we know that's not true. And these are not symptoms that you just have to put up with. You know, so I guess like everything ranging from PMS, so premenstrual syndrome can be a sign of low progesterone levels or a dominant estrogen, polycystic ovaries, or that weight gain, you know, around the stomach can be a sign of insulin resistance, which is often related to excess testosterone. Any skin issues, like where your skin breaks out, can be a sign of, you know, say jaw, chest, neck is more testosterone, whereas your chin, T-section is more estrogen.
Interesting. Yeah, because I definitely noticed that, like, before it's my menstrual cycle, my skin generally is really clear, but I'll get, like, one breakout on my chin or something. And it's, like, always, like, the time, you know?
I'm like, I'm getting my period. And like, and you know, things like that all used to be like normal. I don't consider it normal. I don't consider any of these symptoms something that we should ever have to put up with. And it can be simply a matter of, for you, maybe boosting your progesterone at that time of the month, which would therefore bring your estrogen levels down, and decrease that the outbreaks. So usually a lot of supplements are used in sort of hormone balancing. So making sure that your liver's functioning properly, fiber, milk thistle, rosemary, more along your like herbs. And then Vitex, so chasteberry tree, helps to increase progesterone levels. And then also looking at, say, maybe like a methylated soy, which will help with clear out estrogen or excess estrogen levels. Estrogen's not the enemy. It's just that if your body's not metabolizing it properly, and it, say, it's circulating your system and building up and causing any of these signs and symptoms, then it's a sign, you know, that it might need a bit of assistance, or your body needs assistance somewhere in clearing it out. It's really cool. I see it a lot, especially these days, because we're surrounded by so many chemicals.
Yeah, I know.
But yeah, I think like the signs and symptoms are extensive. Like, and that's just going off excess estrogen and testosterone and progesterone levels. Then you go like perimenopause and menopause, you know, so you've got your hot flushes and your changes in mood and weight gain, and even like your thyroid issues. So that could be thinning of the eyebrows, the outer third of your eyebrows, hair loss, scaly skin, inability to lose weight. So to me, any of these symptoms, I said, they're not normal. They're something that I think needs more investigation and can generally be corrected.
Yeah, definitely. Because if we, you know, said that, I guess the most common symptoms I would say that people experience are probably PMS, like the mood swings before, or, you know, skin breaking out or feeling like particularly like bloated or just more like puffy. How can we kind of like regulate that and avoid that?
A really high like anti-inflammatory, high antioxidant diet. And that's, you know, what we've been talking about, the phytoestrogens, so your flax seeds, your organic soys, your really good fish and fish oils. Cod liver oil, for example, has really good high vitamin A, so that's very good for skin as well. Vitamin E, so that like evening primrose oil, that helps with hormone balance too. So that's where my I created the E3 diet, which was very high doses of vitamin A and omega-3s. And that was to help you reduce that inflammation, which will again help with gut health, which helps with hormone balance. So it's kind of like the on-flow effect, and making sure you're having the abundance of fruit and veggies in the day, and the nuts and seeds and the healthy fats and the proteins. I think if you've got a really good basis and the bones of a good diet, and you have a good idea of what every day should consist of, you know, some days you're going to eat more or less of some things, but you've got like those the bones to it, then that's a good start. And the first start I would always encourage someone to make if they had a hormone imbalance. And then it's also what you're not eating, so eradicating these vegetable oils, which are very inflammatory, eradicating the excess sugars. If you're gluten sensitive, that's a really important one. A2 dairy milk can be better for girls suffering endometriosis. There's a lot of like foods that we should look at specifically to you as well, like you know, depending on the hormone imbalance. Making sure you get enough iodine, making sure you get enough vitamin D, so getting outside and preferably exercising outside on a daily basis. If you've got those, you know, the diet and the exercise covered, that's when I usually go, right, what symptoms are still being experienced? Do we need to do some gut repair, you know, reline the gut lining, because that's where effectively if you've got high stress, it takes your gut lining to make that cortisol. So that's when, once you've got like, you know, I think the diet and the exercise lined up, that's when you go a little bit deeper and go, are we looking at gut? Are we going straight to rebalance these hormones? Are we looking at the thyroid? So there's no one size fits all.
Yeah, it's kind of like hard to give one answer, right? Because everyone's obviously so individual.
And I don't want everyone running off going, I need to eat, you know.
Of course.
Whatever, like you know, get it right for you, and the long-term results will like fall into place.
Yeah, because I feel like gut health has so much to do with the way that your body looks and the way that your food digests and your energy levels. Like, I hear so many girls who'd be like, oh, I fixed my gut issues, and like, I don't know, they've just like, you know, looked so much brighter and healthier.
Yes.
And yeah, you might drop the weight, you know, it's crazy.
gut's like your number one. Like, it's one of those things, you know, if you're highly stressed, your gut's going to be affected. If your hormones are out of balance, it's going to be your gut. Mm. You know, it, like, it's just by fixing the gut and removing any, say, inflammatory foods can be like absolutely life-changing.
Yeah. And do you recommend taking like probiotics and prebiotics to help with the gut?
Absolutely. Yeah. Prebiotics are so important, you know, making sure that you like a good non-sugar filled kombucha, mm-hmm. Having like half of that every day, or, you know, a shot of that every day. Obviously your fiber is a really good prebiotic, so making sure that we're having plenty of fiber, whether it's psyllium or flax or linseed, and then again your vegetables and fruits as well. That's super important, because that fiber, so, you know, if you're not regularly going to the bathroom, or they're not properly formed or anything like that, there's obviously an issue there. And your body can continually circulate those toxins. So fiber is really important to get rid of the toxins.
Yeah.
Yes, but I'm not of the mentality that we all just need to take a random probiotic every day. Mm. There's probiotics for certain things. You know, it's such a small, we've only researched such a small area, but there's billions of bacteria in our gut. And if you're just constantly taking the same probiotic, you're just replenishing the same thing, and maybe throwing that out of balance. So it's such a delicate structure down there. I think getting the right advice, getting the right probiotic, again, there's no one size fits all, and possibly doing some gut work. So say you are high stressed, or you're experiencing what's called leaky gut, which is where the nutrients are being leached out of the gut, and due to a compromise in the gut lining that we see a lot in, say, really stressed people, or anyone suffering from a food intolerance or even autoimmune disease. And you can reline that gut lining with, say, glutamine and zinc, and that will help to decrease your cortisol levels and help your body to remake the neurotransmitters that it made in the gut. And just often it leads to such like anti-inflammatory that people see a lot of weight loss. Quite, it's often like fluid retention and bloating, that's what goes, but that can result in immediate weight loss.
So it's so interesting, by just like fixing these little things, well, not so little things, but, you know, you think it's like a little thing, it changes so much. But would you say that we need to be taking any other vitamins on like a daily basis, or, you know, do we need to be getting that mainly from food? Is that like the ideal?
Oh, look, the ideal is food. Like omega-3s are best absorbed through food, through like oily fish. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're a vegetarian, then say getting like walnuts and chia seeds, and that's your best way to get your omegas. Your body doesn't quite convert it in the same way, but I guess better than nothing. I think, you know, as we touched on, everyone's quite time poor, and you know, with the cost of living going up, and organic produce is just unbelievable, and not only that, wrapped in plastic, so is it really organic?
I feel like the organic choices here are just so minimal. It's like one aisle. It's like nothing there.
Oh, it's nothing there, and it's extortionate. It's like, you know, $10 for broccoli. It is ridiculous. So if you don't have access to that, and always obviously washing vegetables and fruits that you do have. But I think like a really good multivitamin, and I mean a good one, I don't mean like just off the supermarket shelf. Mm-hmm. There's therapeutic grade supplements have been, you know, tested for quality. There's a reason they're therapeutic grade. They're the best that you can get, and they're often cheaper than what's just on the supermarket shelf. But if you're like, you know, just taking a multivitamin, or just for the sake of it, you're probably just flushing it down the toilet, let's be honest. I think there's a time and a place for supplements. I think that we should, vitamin D is a really big one, we're all deficient, so getting like a really good vitamin D and taking that daily is very important.
Even if we're in the sun a lot, we still need to be taking vitamin D.
Yeah, look, vitamin D is a funny one. So if you're in the sun every day at midday with your clothes off, essentially, like it's your tummy and under your arms are the best places to absorb vitamin D. Mm-hmm. If you're lucky enough to sit in the sun every day for an hour in your bikini, then, you know, you probably don't need to take a vitamin D supplement. But if you're more of an olive complexion, then you don't absorb it as well. Like if you're sitting in an office all day, there's just no way, you know. And then during winter, I mean, I live in the Southern Highlands and it's pretty cold down here. There's not a lot of sun. You know, we're mostly deficient. Like to get that level would be pretty difficult.
Okay.
Realistically, like 4,000 IUs a day is probably a good starting point for anyone taking a vitamin D supplement.
And does it matter on the timing that you take these supplements? Because I heard that taking obviously like vitamin D and iron and stuff like that in the morning is good, but then in the evening you should be taking things like magnesium and
That's correct. You've got to think about like what causes your energy. So your iron's energy, and if you take that sort of any time from lunchtime afterwards or more towards evening, it can really interrupt your sleep. In saying that, if you have an issue taking it, it can make you nauseous. You can take iron before bed, but I usually only recommend that for my pregnant girls if they're struggling. Should be taken with food. Most supplements should be taken with food just to increase absorption and also reduce any, you know, nausea, risk of nausea. Vitamin D, again, you know, an energy, we're looking at your circadian rhythms and your immune system there. So I always suggest taking that sort of in the day, but with food. It's fat soluble, so you need to take it with some other sort of food source that has fat in it. And otherwise, again, B vitamins you want to take in the morning as well, because that's going to give you an energy boost.
And you mentioned about the E3 diet. Do you want to explain a bit more, you know, what it is and how it helps with weight loss in your clients?
Because it's such a huge focus on your anti-inflammatories, your antioxidants, your vitamin A, iodine, everything that really supports, I guess, weight loss and beautiful skin, because I like to make sure they go hand in hand. We all want beautiful skin. It's always important. It's, you know, it's
the first thing. We want the glow, the inner glow and the outer glow.
It's a big focus on those aspects, but it also removes refined sugars, your processed foods, so anything that causes inflammation. So it helps with insulin resistance, so it helps your body to metabolize glucose and carbohydrates. It also focuses on metabolism boosters, being like your green tea, your dark chocolate. See, I'm not always fun. I love my dark chocolate.
Every night.
Every night. And it's just that little, you know, little treat before bed. And again, you can definitely train yourself to, you know, a couple of squares and you've had enough. You know, making sure that if you're going to drink wine, then it might be like your Pinot Noir, which at least has high levels of resveratrol in there, which is very anti-inflammatory and, again, good for your skin. So it's a diet based on, I think it's a really realistic diet. It's not like do this for a week and like, you know, that was so hard, you know, big detox or restrictive in any way. I think it's more about having an abundance of nutrients that are going to assist you with your goals, but also removing the foods that are going to inhibit you from reaching those goals. So it is planned to be like long-term and to help you create really good habits.
Yeah. So what kind of foods are the best for glowing skin?
Your oily fish, so your regal salmon, your trout, sardines, mackerel if you're into fish. You've got your walnuts, you've got your chia seeds, you've got your leafy greens. And then I even love like, you know, your good probiotics, like a really good Greek yogurt. Not Greek style, it's got to be Greek, proper Greek, because they're higher in protein. Your berries, which are full of antioxidants and vitamin C, again, for glowing skin and for wound healing. I love your nuts and seeds. So anything that's like a beautiful paleo or keto muesli, like the Farmer Joe, do a really beautiful mix of, you know, all your best sesame seeds and pumpkin seeds and zinc, which is always good for skin. It's good for hormone balance, good for your libido, good for immune system. So it's very much like making sure every day you get an abundance of nutrients that's going. And then when you're eating like that, you tend to not want the bad.
How does that happen? I guess it's just our bodies getting used to the foods that it feels good on, and it's like we automatically do just crave those things. Exactly. And that's definitely something that I noticed when I switched I guess my diet and I started eating more whole foods. Like I just literally don't crave like the burgers or the pizzas or any, like, it just doesn't, was it, it's not my first choice. And if I am eating those things, I would want it to be like, you know, healthy in some way or another, like make it myself or
yes, exactly. I think it is that, like, once you eat those foods on a regular basis, your body tends to want them because they're so full of nutrients that it becomes the go-to.
We talked a lot about everyone being quite individual in like the ways that they eat. How important is eating for our own bodies? Because there are so many like rules and advice put out there. How do we go about eating in a way that is right for us? Is it just trial and error, or is it like we need to be seeing a specialist for this? But if, you know, people can't necessarily afford a specialist, like what kind of advice would you give them?
Obviously, seeing a specialist is the first way to go, because they're going to hone in on you. It's going to be holistic according to you and your body and your exact hormone balance and where you're at and your goals. It's always important for us that we take into account your goals, because it's all very well for someone to come in with, you know, they might come in with bad skin, but they want to lose weight and they don't care about the skin. Yeah. And you can't be that person's like, but how about, you know. So it's very much like, what are your goals? And my job is to work out the best way to get there that's right for you, that's going to give you the most benefits. If you can't afford that, I think starting with the whole write down what you're eating, you know, for 2 or 3 days, look at it and go, where can I improve? Am I getting protein with every meal? Am I having some sort of fresh fruit or vegetable with every meal? You know, like, have I had beige food all day? Am I having Weet-Bix, a sandwich and pasta? Like, think really, you know, is there an abundance of color in my diet? And think about things like signs and symptoms when you write this diary, like, oh yeah, I ate that sandwich and I did feel really tired afterwards, or I had to go to the bathroom really quickly, or I was bloated for the afternoon. Like, start to get to know your body. Start to get to recognize that, you know, think about your period. Okay, if you're someone who's always suffered from painful periods or breakouts or something, like, let that be a trigger that there's something there, because you know, you don't need to ignore this, and it doesn't need to be something you just put up with. But I think there's something to be said about really getting to know your body. Take note of it. It doesn't have to be long term, but just start to recognize signs and symptoms and then make the changes based on that. Like, where, look at this diet, where can I improve that? Okay, well, maybe I won't have pasta for dinner. Maybe I can put in a fish dish or just protein and vegetables. Maybe tonight I'll swap the milk chocolate for some dark chocolate. Tomorrow I'm going to make sure I get up and you know, say something positive and then go for a 20-minute walk or get outside at some stage. I think there's a lot to be said that, like, we're not stupid. I think there's an abundance of information, but go back to the basics, go back to the Mediterranean diet, look at how they eat. That's probably my best form of advice, because they're still enjoying their pastas and sourdoughs and puddings and things like that. So how are they enjoying it, and how are they so healthy, and start to implement those into your life?
Yeah, I think it's a mix between the actual food and also just the lifestyle that you live and like the stress that you have. Because yeah, if you're stressing about every single thing that you eat, it's like, that's not a happy way to live, you know, because you're like holding on to that stress, and it makes food not enjoyable. But even when you go back to, you know, when, like, obviously as women, we have our menstrual cycle, do we have to be eating differently depending on which phase we're in? Because I've heard a lot about, you know, depending on which phase you're in, we should be kind of monitoring what kind of exercise we're doing and also what kind of foods we're eating to help support ourselves in that week or in that cycle.
I think there's a lot of focus on that at the moment. In my humble opinion, I think it's too much to think about. You know, like, having to tweak your diet and exercise regime based on when your progesterone's peaking and estrogen's declining, when realistically, if you really just stop and listen to what your body's after, it's going to tell you if it's tired and it's, you know, maybe you just want to walk today and not go to the gym, or just do a Pilates or a yoga session, which I hope you do every day. They're my favorite, my number ones for females. But I think, like, So Pilates and just the little muscles that tend to be neglected, they're the ones that are going to keep you toned and in shape and long and lean. And if that's the look you're going for, then that's highly exercise that I'd recommend. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a lot to be, like, we already have so much to think about. If you have to then, as I said, like, think about the calories you're consuming, our metabolisms naturally boost when we become up to our periods. So we naturally want to eat more. My best advice is eat more.
Yeah.
Listen to your body. Yeah. You don't have to don't eat the wrong food, because it really can escalate feelings, symptoms of PMS and PMDD. Can increase bloating and everything. So stick with, like, the good foods that you have been eating all month, but maybe just increase a little bit more. Eat some more whole grains. Eat some more, brown rice, enjoy that bowl of pasta. Mm. I think there's something to be said about nourishing yourself at that time. And if you don't feel like exercising, as I said, walking, Pilates, yoga, gentle exercises is very important. But, after your period, you generally will feel a little bit more energetic. So maybe that's the time when you start to put those runs back in, or, increase the weights if that's what you want to do.
Yeah.
I think it's listening to your body.
Yeah, I think that really is it. It's really just like listening to your own body and just seeing what really feels good for you. And I think sometimes people might be like, okay, well, how do I listen to my own body? Like, how do I listen to my intuition? But I think with that is, like, we need to give ourselves space and time to actually give us a chance to actually do that. Yeah. And I think a lot of time we can be so, like, busy and be like on the go and, do this and this, yeah, and like have everything booked in. So we don't give ourselves a chance to listen to our own body. But it's just about sitting down and being like, okay, like, how do I actually feel? Like, do a body scan. Like, what is my body actually telling me that I need? Am I hungry, or is it just because I'm stressed or just anxious?
I'm just really thirsty or dehydrated.
Yeah.
Because we do tend to do that as a lot. And I think there's, like, trying to just stop and eat for 10 minutes and not be doing a million things, and then noticing, like, oh God, that barley or whatever didn't agree with me. Mm-hmm. Recognizing that and not just soldiering through, or looking back at the end of your day and go, how's my energy? Have a little think about it, journal it for a little while if you need to. And then once you start to get it in your head, that will start to make the changes and help you make the changes. And again, like, there's, as I said, like, supplements can make the world of difference to a lot of girls as well. Mm. That can be like the make or break of how they're feeling and how their menstrual cycles are and how they suffer and how much they suffer. But making sure you're prescribed the correct ones. On, magnesium's fabulous, and we should all be on taking a good quality magnesium. But whether, you might need a sleep magnesium, whereas I might need an energy magnesium. So there's so many different concoctions and different brands and everything. But getting the right advice is really important. And if affordability of seeing someone's a problem, I think you'll find that. So many practitioners are so happy just to see you on a one-off. Like, it's so rare that I make my clients come back and back and back and back. To me, if that happens, I haven't done a very good job, to be honest.
Yeah.
I probably judge myself on that. Like, I like to get my clients results, and I like them to see results and to then know, because once you do, you know you're on the right path.
Yeah.
Hormones are harder because they're always – 3 months. It's always a 3 month, 100-day turnaround to rebalance them. And there's a million, as we've talked about, a million different ways to rebalance them, whether it's through the gut, whether it's through, a histamine, antihistamine diet, whatever it is. And I always have to ask my clients to give me the time of that 3 months so that you do see the changes along the way, but know that it's probably going to take that long, and I require a commitment, for example, of maybe 3 months worth of supplements that are going to help with changing that balance. But I would always expect my clients to see good positive changes along the way.
Yeah.
And again, that's
It's all about, obviously, the consistency. You can't just do something for 2 weeks and expect things to happen. You need to actually give it a chance. And also, it sounds like you're just kind of showing them the ropes, so then after that they can just kind of live their life and just be more mindful about it. Because I think it's like, once you kind of solve the bulk of the problem, you don't have to be as strict after that, right? But it's just getting that out of the way first to then
get out of the way. Exactly. Yeah. And look, if you're susceptible to any sort of imbalance, whether it's genetic or, you know, you've got some sort of malfunction, say for endometriosis, you know, my body doesn't detoxify estrogen like it should, then yes, this will be an ongoing thing. But once you've made the bulk of the changes, like you said, then it, you know, I enjoy my wine, I enjoy my chocolate, I enjoy eating out, I enjoy not exercising for a week. But, you know, it's sort of, it becomes much easier because, and your body sort of resets itself and you kind of also learn to know what to do and what to look for when things are falling out.
Yeah. Okay, well, thank you so much for having this chat with me. I feel like, yeah, it's been very informative and people find this very useful. But we always end our podcast with a challenge of the week. So do you have a challenge that you can give our listeners today that they can kind of practice and be mindful of this week?
Oh, I have a million for you. I think one challenge this week, I want you, I would really love, two things. Can we come off coffee and can we come off sugar?
Mm-hmm. They're both great ones.
I think doing a week of that really, you know, once you get through a few days of headaches, that's a huge reset of not just like your energy levels, but also the way you view food by once you remove them and you don't need them anymore. Mm-hmm. And then you start to consciously look for better options and better ways to get energy, like going for a walk or something.
Yeah.
Then, yeah, so if you can commit this one week to like going, I'm not going to do refined sugar and I'm not going to do any coffee and see how you go.
What about matcha? Because I know that's or I drink matcha.
If you like it, I could never get into it. But if you like it.
Oh, my God, I love it.
It's good for you.
Yeah.
And I still have green tea. It's very good for you
as well. Yeah, I love green tea. But yeah, I guess that coffee is a massive thing that, such a culture thing as well, right? Like, people wake up and they get their coffee. It's almost like glamorized in a way. But why is it bad for you? Is it bad for you or is one a day okay?
No, look, one a day is okay. It's more when your body, when you become reliant on it for energy. So say you wake up in the morning, the first thing you're doing is having that coffee. A, it's very abrasive to the gut lining. So it's quite an acidic way to start your day. And B, it's going to spike your cortisol levels. What goes up must come down. Mm. So if you're first thing in the day when your cortisol levels should be at their best and you should, you know, or on the increase and you're giving yourself a superficial boost, you're going to be chasing that high for the rest of the day. And I think that's why a lot of people fall into the habit of having two coffees, three coffees. My client today said she was up to five coffees a day. I'm like, okay. I know. I was like, oh my
God, I would not be able to.
Yeah. But if you can reset, take away that need for caffeine just to keep you energized and look for, you know, swap it out for some kombucha or green tea and going for walks and things, then A, it's just a way to gain back that control and to restabilize your energy. And then you can get a really good picture of where your energy's at. Because if you're just really high all day, you probably will have a bit of a crash once you come off the caffeine, and it's a really good way to see where you're at and start again.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons I never really got into coffee, because I just didn't want to become reliant on it. Because I feel like once you get reliant on something, you want to be like naturally energized. And when you wake up, it's true, like your energy is at its peak because you've literally just had a full, like, hopefully 8-7-8 hours of sleep, right?
Yeah.
So like, why do you need something straight away to like make you feel even more awake? It's like, normally it's just getting up, hopefully if it's sunny, you know, go outside for a walk in the sun, drink loads of water, and that will naturally wake you up. But I guess maybe people don't.
And if it doesn't, that's a really good sign. Like get to learn to recognize what you're masking.
Yeah.
You know, is a band-aid for a thyroid condition or low iron levels? You know, what's going on that you have to have all these coffees throughout the day, or you have to start your day with a coffee? Are you sleeping badly? So I think it's a really good way just to get to know yourself and re-get to know yourself and see where your body's at. And yes, you might feel crappy for a few days, but just think the only way is up.
I've heard people that have gone off of coffee, and obviously it's awful when they first get off it because they've been drinking it so much, but then they're like, after that, the mental clarity is just like no other.
Yes. And a lot of people don't go back to it. I'm so sorry, my puppy's having a bark. one of my chickens, I think.
Oh, so cute. I love that. So wholesome, the chickens.
So wholesome. I've got my eggs in the backyard.
Yeah. That's how we should be getting our food. It's just on the backyard.
It is. I'm no gardener, though. I haven't quite mastered the whole growing of my own veggies, but now that I've seen the price of lettuce, I will start.
Yeah. Maybe that's something we should all just try and do.
Yes, it is.
Amazing. Is there anything else that you'd like to leave us with, like where we can find you?
Yes, I've just actually started a new clinic in I'm in the Southern Highlands. I have. I'm now working at the Women's Health Centre over in Mittagong, but I'm also on telemedicine, so I can consult worldwide via online and phone consults as well as face-to-face.
Amazing.
I have a hormone reset program, which is a month's worth of a very in-depth program that actually hones in on every individual, which I've had 100% success rate with for all my clients that have done it. And I feel like it's a really good way, if you're interested in your hormones and your hormone balance, to start the journey. And otherwise, if you're a really busy person and, you know, looking to eat the right food, then maybe just doing my quick little supermarket shred is the way to go, because it's just going to give you tips of what to eat off the supermarket shelf that's still healthy and still help you reach your goals. So, yeah, if you wanted to reach me, I my website's www.pipreadnutrition.com, and otherwise you can DM me on Instagram, or I'm always happy to talk through your goals and see if I can, am I the one to help you out.
Yeah, and what's your Instagram?
At pipreadnutrition.
Amazing. I'll leave your website and Instagram in the show notes below so people can find you.
Thank you.
But yeah, amazing. Thank you so much. It's been so nice having you on the podcast.
It's been so lovely. I really enjoyed talking about this, and I really like, it's such a, you know, huge area of every woman's health.
So I hope
your listeners get to take away something.
Amazing. Thank you.
Thank you.